to our Apple click. Can everyone hear me? Is that better? Ooh, wonderful. I'm not as loud as Jonathan, so I've got to project. So I'm the grape geneticist curator for the USDA in Geneva. But here I'm actually privileged to talk about my first love, apples. So this was PhD research that I did with the USDA and Cornell and Susan Brown, my advisor. I just love the diversity present in the collection. It's so impressive just to walk through. And if you've never been, we always have an annual open house where we can work you in for a private tour. But so this is one of the largest, most extensive apple collections in the world. And my PhD was focused on Floridzin primarily, which kind of is kind of a mouthful, but it's this apple unique phenolic compound. And you can really distinguish, you know, other crops and apple based on just this one compound. And it's very abundant in vegetative tissues. So if you look at leaves or bark or roots, it's about 80 to 90% of the phenolic profile and 14% of the leaf dry weight, just the dry weight alone. In fruit, unfortunately, it does decrease about 2 to 6% of the phenolic content. So you have other anthocyanins and other flavanols, the other pigments, which are important antioxidants, but it does decrease significantly in fruit. And it has some very interesting qualities. So for humans, it actually blocks glucose absorption in the intestine. So it's a potential anti-diabetic that the pharmaceutical companies have kind of like, you know, jumped on the pathways and the mechanism for that and developed, you know, drugs based on this apple compound. And some of its other effects are anti-cancer, anti-inflammatory. And it seems like there's this laundry list, this growing infomercial list of qualities that Floridzin has. It's got a very simple pathway. This just shows like how it breaks off from the other phenolics. So it's a very simple early on break, but it's this double carbon reduction or double bond reduction that separates coumarol CoA from the dihydro form. And it's just that very simple pathway, but then other enzymes are shared. But biochemically and genetically, we know very little about Floridzin and its, you know, regulation and its synthesis. Whereas for the other flavonoids, like we know so much about anthocyanins and other pigments and how they're produced. So apple is kind of a model organism for these compounds. And it's kind of a challenging model because of its reproductive biology, its longevity. So part of the study that we did was involved a germplasm survey looking at very, you know, distinct varieties, different wild relatives, across seasons, looking at leaves, because when you're comparing small fruited apples to very large fruit, it's kind of hard to really make a good comparison. So leaves are a nice way to standardize. And then the part I want to focus on today is the development of these F1 hybrid populations. So again, I was fortunate to come full circle from going from looking at the germplasm to using it to develop these populations, and was able to use some of the populations that Susan had developed for her program as well. What was most exciting is that we had these Floridzin derivatives. So Floridzin, the precursor is Floridzin, and that's the most prominent form in most Malus species, including the cultivated apple. But we also had Trilobitin, which comes from Malus trilobata. We didn't have this in the collection, and I was able to work out getting some summer, or some budwood from, I think it was from Ohio, that had come from Lebanon. And then we have some new seed accessions from Turkey. So this is kind of an unusual Malus species that's, we're hoping to gain better representation in our collection. Siboldin is another form, and it's from Malus turingo, which was formerly Siboldii from Southeast Asia, Japan, and Korea. And these other forms have unique properties beyond, you know, what Floridzin has. So Trilobitin is actually a sweetener, and companies are interested in using that. It's a non-artificial sweetener that you could add to certain products. And Siboldin is actually a more potent antioxidant than Floridzin. And so there's, you know, significant leaf content variation ranging from, you know, 125 milligrams per gram all the way down to 25 milligrams per gram. But we see a large genetic factor, like very high heritabilities for certain species. But our main question was like, can we map any loci? Can we use the germplasm doing association studies or these hybrid populations? And we were able to use the pseudo test cross design and developed five F1 populations to study this in Apple. And one of the cool features is that they are codominant. So when you cross a Floridzin type by a Trilobitin type, you get these different combinations of Floridzin P or Trilobitin T. And so these are a few of the combinations that we saw in the collection. And what was unusual, there were no Cybolden-only types or no Cybolden-Floridzin types. And so as we're kind of piecing together our model and our hypothesis about their inheritance and their biochemistry, which we know even less about the Trilobitin and Cybolden, right, we have somewhat of a working model. So this was the F1 hybrid population that Susan had developed to look at Pellgreen lethal. So it's one of her advanced selections crossed by Malus prunifolia in our germplasm 589816. You can look it up later. It's and so the cross was a Floridzin type by one with all three. And then we get this interesting segregation where we pull out now a new phenotype, Floridzin trilobitin. And you see it falls in a kind of a 1-to-2-to-1 segregation. So this nice Mendelian inheritance that we observed. So we kind of put together a model, even if it's not perfect and it's very, you know, not very supported with the biochemical and the genetic information, we had to have something to work with. So we propose Floridzin goes to Floridzin by a single gene, Trilobitin, another single gene, and then Cybolden is actually, there's an intermediary step with a hydroxylation of Floridzin that we're proposing, so a new allele C and then B to produce Cybolden. So there's this dependency on the B allele that we're calling a gene to produce both Trilobitin and Cybolden, which could explain why we never see Cybolden alone or paired with just Floridzin. So these were the chromatographs of our parental phenotypes. So we have, you know, our proposed genotypes. So we propose that, you know, either they're homozygous or heterozygous. We propose that, you know, the prunifolia parent was heterozygous for all three dihydrochalcones and the homozygous for Floridzin and then homozygous recessive for Trilobitin and Cybolden. So it wasn't detected in New York 152. Again, it follows a perfect segregation, except we don't see the Cybolden Floridzin types. So those are just absorbed into the Floridzin. So they are expressed as Floridzin only. That's where we get the 50 and 25% that we observed. So again, it all fit. So using GBS markers, we were able to develop some mapping, some genetic maps. And this single factor quick analysis shows that, you know, Floridzin, there's a strong a linkage, strong QTL on linkage group 7 for Trilobitin 7 and 8, and then Cybolden 7 and 8 as well. And so some initial, you know, screening, looking through the genome, we didn't find any significant, like, loci or any significant candidate genes that really stood out. Recent work has, like, pulled out a lot of the Floridzin glycosyl transferases, other genes, but none of them were presented on 7 and 8. And here are the maps. So, you know, standard QTL analysis. So this explained 25 to 50% of the variation that we observed on linkage group 7 and then 20% of on linkage group 8. So, again, it explained quite a bit, and we can actually predict very well, like, what its chemical type will be. So again, this is a mosaic plot. So the height of the plot represents its phenotype, its chemical composition, and then the width represents its genotype. So you see the on linkage group 7, the Floridzin type is really strong, dominant homozygous for G, and then we have the heterozygous small group of heterozygous alleles or markers for those individuals, but we see this very distinct, you know, segregation. If you have a PT, you're likely going to have, you know, genotype R at that allele. And then, so then what was really exciting was on linkage group 8, the Floridzin types, we actually saw two, you know, equally proportioned genotypes. So P or C and Y. So either you're homozygous or heterozygous for this linkage group 8 marker. And that really did kind of confirm that, like, okay, there might be something to the the S and the SP types. So some of those Y types could actually be genetically Cybolden and Floridzin types, but only expressed as Floridzin because of that dependency on the trilobitin allele. And what was kind of exciting is that this actually carried through with the germplasm using just an association study, using a logistic regression on the segregating types. So again, we identified the marker on 7, which paired up with our F1 maps in the germplasm. So using only 279 accessions because it's such a strongly dominant gene. We didn't have time to genotype these other populations, but this was the one we did genotype, 13427. We had 454 individuals. Another cross using Everest, all crossed back to the same prunifolia parent, 150 accessions. Then Everest by Red Jade progeny, three different progeny with different dihydrochalcum profiles. We also developed, three more populations from those. So a lot of things to test. One of the limitations of the population 13427 that we did genotype is it was Floridzin homozygous. So we wanted to see what happens when you cross an SPT, one with all three, against an SPT type. So again, we saw the segregation, 1 to 2 to 1 here. Here we got back, a Floridzin segregated. So the parents were SPT, SPT, segregated for Floridzin. And so here's another additional pattern that we saw. So some different inheritances that we're observing and all really fit strongly the Mendelian or the model that we fit with the three segregating genes. All except for 16708, which did not fit, but it also had some very unusual phenotypic characteristics. And what was expected is that if they all are codominant and you can have heterozygous types, what happens if you get, triple recessive types? And we didn't observe that, but that could be lethal or could be something else worth investigating later on. But these populations did confirm our results, all except the 708, which merits further investigation. So some of the chemical variations of Floridzin was still the prominent type in the populations. We were expecting maybe to see some more Cybolden or trilobitin dominant, but Floridzin is still very prominent genetically and biochemically. And what's interesting is that the correlations between the compounds changes between profiles. So when you have a PT and an SPT, they have a different correlation with Floridzin, which again, understanding now, we have some tools now to look at the biochemistry and then some genetic resources to do that as well. Conclusions, malus evolved under high dihydrochalcum concentrations, which is related to auxin transport and other interesting physiological effects. For humans, important anti-diabetic properties and some significant leaf content variation and some interesting segregation patterns for the interspecific hybrids. Again, the single inheritance of the Cybolden and trilobitin, we hopefully can investigate further to find some more candidate genes or other important pathways that we can study. Just want to acknowledge quickly the wonderful graduate committee that I had, Susan Brown in the room, Laleng Cheng, Michael Gore, and Gaonwan Zong, who is the research leader, and the wonderful people at the Plant Genetic Resources Unit who support us. And I did promise before questions that I would promote the postdoc opportunity that we have in the grape genetics resources or research unit in Geneva, New York. So if you are interested, you can see me after. Thank you.